Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So good morning, Hare Krishna to everyone. A couple of special things today we're going to do as part of the class. The subject matter is a description of the spiritual world, so I've heard that Shyamala Kishori has a video clip of when she... audio clip of her describing spiritual world when she was 6 years old. Five, okay. Even better. So, okay. Obviously you know from a previous birth. But what I'd like to do before we do that, so we're going to do a little exercise first, and then we will hear her audio clip, and then we'll read text number 13 from the 15th chapter of the third canto, and discuss a little bit about the spiritual world. Okay? So a little exercise first. And this is designed just to try to help you, to prepare you for the description of the spiritual world that that we're going to be reading about. And I'd like to ask all of you a question about how we know the nature of a place. Has anyone here ever been to Japan? Been to Japan? So you've been, two people have been to Japan. Okay, well, those two people, maybe they can help us to some degree, but you shouldn't spoil it for the rest of them because of your familiarity with Japan. But if you haven't been to Japan, what would you like to know about Japan? Because I've been to Japan myself also. I spent some time there. And I would like to ask you, what would you want to know about Japan that makes it a more real place to you? I mean, we've all heard of Japan. We've seen it on the map and everything. But what would you want to know about Japan that makes it a more real place? You want to know about the people, right? You know, what they look like. Generally, they're shorter than Americans. That's one thing I can say. And yeah, that's one thing. And there's not as much variety in hair color, I think, there. More dark hair color than here, like you see blonde and so many other things, but more uniform in the hair color there. Not texture, so it's different. Some is more curly and some more straight, but yes. What's the landscape like? What does it look like in the land there? I was primarily in the cities, although I did take a bullet train and I saw Mount Fuji, which stands, you know, very prominent on the landscape there. But in the cities, I didn't see so much. There is a thick forest of trees around the Imperial Palace, which is right in the center of Tokyo, but mainly very modern buildings built up like that. Yes, Jay. Yeah, well, in the city, primarily, in older sections of the city, you could see it was more, the buildings weren't so tall. They were more, the tallest of the skyscrapers and everything was in the downtown areas, but he went out in the neighborhoods and things like that. The buildings tended to be more, not so high. And some of those that have been there, you might confirm these things if you have some things too, but, like that, yeah. Is there an ISKCON temple? Yeah, there's ISKCON temple there. Yeah. Food? Well, that's a little hard for a devotee, you know, food. I was there when I was a devotee. We did, because there wasn't so much of a temple presence there when we were there, We lived in an apartment. All the brahmacharis lived in an apartment, and we would go out and do sankirtan during the day. And sometimes we would eat in restaurants and things like that, and we would have just rice. So you could get rice pretty easily. So that's, say, but the food, I mean, obviously the devotees had their own food, but they have a different kind of diet. Yes? What activities can you do there? Well, one of the prominent things that I noticed was is that they were really into baseball. You know, U.S. baseball there. I mean, even on the college campuses, they would be like playing catch, pitcher and catcher. You know, but there'd be like one, two, three, four sets of them, like in a row like that, and they'd be playing. So they were very much into baseball, and big baseball stadiums were there too. Also horse racing. They had horse racing there that they did. So, and there were other areas of the cities where people did different things. Like there was a red light district, and then they had, a lot of these halls where people would sit playing the games. Not like slot machines, pachinko, yeah, they were playing. Like at the train stations, if you go to a train station, there'd be a big pachinko hall there, and so many people would be sitting in each machine playing, so that was very quite prominent. Yes, Lucy.
What's the daily life like?
Daily life? Pretty much like ours. One of the things that I noted initially was that if you go to a department store when it opens in the morning, everyone, all the employees stand, you know, and very erect, waiting to greet you. And so when you come in, everyone says, konnichiwa, konnichiwa, konnichiwa. They sort of bow to you like that. All the employees are there on the floor ready to serve the customers. Maybe a couple more. Yeah. History of Japan. What I saw physically of history was the temples, the Shinto shrines and things like that. The people weren't very religious. That's one thing about the Japanese. They didn't appear to be very religious. And even these shrines, they were like shrines. They weren't like actively temples and a lot of people going to them and things like that. One more. Yeah. Special about Japan? Very materialistic people. Very competent materially, in terms of, you know, we know manufacturing and producing electronic goods, vehicles, everything. Very, very competent in that regard. Very, very materialistic. Okay. That's a little about Jim. We could go on, you know. But the purpose of this is that just to get you thinking about, because we're going to be reading some verses about the spiritual world. And so you may want to know some of these same things about the spiritual world. And so just like I have experience having gone to Japan and therefore I can relate that to you, the Bhagavatam can give us experience of the spiritual world and it can relate it to us. So when we read the verses, you know, keep some of these questions in mind because it might help you make the spiritual world more real to you. Okay, and that's the objective. So Shyamala Kishore, you want to now hear her description.
I wanted to say about this little recording you're gonna hear. It's really short, but there we learned a song the gopis sang when their separation of Krishna after he left the rasa dance. So you'll hear me at the end singing that, like, "Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna?" I know you'll hear it, so that puts that in context.
Okay. Good. Yes.
Okay. Hi, Bob. I hope you enjoyed this. Goodbye. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And in the spiritual world, you know what they did? They played happily forever and ever and ever. You know what? When you're in the spiritual, you never come back down here unless you want to. And in the spiritual world, you have no sickness, you don't die, a little body, and you don't, fall, and there's so nice things there, there's nice flowers, a beautiful, huge, so huge, house of horses. There's flowers growing around it, trees that give beautiful fruits, and there is rabbits, deers that are never scared of you, and birds, squirrels, and so nice stuff there. There's waterfalls there, and the gopis sing like this. Manukutika namuna manikutari mane Krishna vamukare. And one time they did the rest time, but Krishna disappeared. Oh, how sad they were, and they said to us, here to Rati, where is Krishna? Here to Rati, where is Krishna? Here Kadamba, where is Krishna? Here Kadamba, where is Krishna? Here blueberries, where is Krishna? Here blueberries, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna now? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna now? Don't be afraid of the torch and afraid of the fear hole, King. I'll save you. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna now? And that's what this song. I can't tell you the whole thing because it's almost done with this tape. Hari Bol.
Wow, that's wonderful. Thank you. It's amazing how what she described parallels the verses we're going to read right now. It's really amazing. You know, I think you'll see that as we go through this. And so that makes it more special what you shared to us. So thank you. Because it describes what the Bhagavatam says. Minji must have his experience from that. So we'll read together text number 13. Here we'll chant the Sanskrit. Yeah. And then we'll read the translations. And then what I have on my paper here will cover what's in the purports. Okay. So word meanings te, they, ekada, once upon a time, Bhagavata, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vaikuntasya, of Lord Vishnu, Amala Atmana, being freed from all material contamination, Yayu entered Vaikuntha Nilanam, Lila Nilayam, the abode named Vaikuntha, Sarvaloka, by the residents of all the material planets, Namaskritam, worshipped. Tarekada Bhagavato Vaikuntasya Malatmana Yayur Vaikuntha Nilayam Sarvaloka Namaskritam Tarekada Bhagavato Vaikuntasya Malatmana Yayur Vaikuntha Nilayam Sarvaloka Namaskritam. Okay. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. After thus traveling all over the universes, they also entered into the spiritual sky, for they were freed from all material contamination. In the spiritual sky, there are spiritual planets known as Vaikunthas, which are the residences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His pure devotees. Let me start that sentence again. In the spiritual sky, there are spiritual planets known as Vaikunthas, which are the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His pure devotees, and are worshipped by the residents of all the material planets. So, Shyamala Kishore, do you want to read the purport for us? Because it makes your first point.
The material world is full of cares and anxieties. In any one of the planets, beginning from the highest down to the lowest, Patala, every living creature must be full of cares and anxieties, because in the material planets one cannot live eternally. The living entities, however, are actually eternal. They want an eternal home, an eternal residence, but because of accepting a temporal abode in the material world, they are naturally full of anxiety. In the spiritual sky, the planets are called Vaikuntha, because the residents of these planets are free from all anxieties. For them, there is no question of birth, death, old age, and diseases, and therefore they are not anxious. On the other hand, the residents of the material planets are always afraid of birth, death, disease, and old age, and therefore they are full of anxieties.
Okay, thank you. So the first characteristic of the spiritual world, it's called Vaikuntha, means there's a place where there's no anxieties. That certainly doesn't describe this world, does it? Because we all have one different anxiety or another, almost to the point where we don't know where one starts and the other ends. Have you ever tried to reflect why you're feeling sort of distressed or you're feeling happy? One would trace the origin out in your mind. It's something that can be quite confusing as we have so many sources of anxiety. In this purport, Prabhupada points them, brings them down to this idea that because we are eternal by nature, but we're in a situation where we have birth, death, old age, and disease, these things are the cause of all, the root of all anxiety, because it's not our nature. So the first thing we need to note about the spiritual world is that that is completely absent. We're quite happy to live eternally without being bothered by birth, death, old age, or disease. Is that something that you think people would want? I mean, want to be in a place like that? Yeah, that's a good selling point, right? You know, no birth, death, old age, and disease. Birth. I mean, why is birth listed? I mean, we can understand death, disease, old age. Why birth? Why is birth on this list? Yes.
The nine months the land is upside down in Indicore or something. So although we don't remember now, but at that time you were with
the stress. Right. Yeah. Being packed in the womb is not a pleasant experience, especially because we know that consciousness comes after a certain period of time. So the child in the womb is conscious, and conscious of being confined. I remember as a child myself, if ever I was in a tight situation, I just would start freaking out. You know, I can't be confined like that. And hearing from the science of the Bhagavatam, I have to think that, well, it relates back to that kind of feeling of anxiety of being in the womb. You know, have you seen sometimes a womb that the child kicks and everything like that? It's quite funny, actually. See, the child is actually kicking, and we think, oh, it's so cute, but, I mean, probably they're in there, you know, like trying to stretch out. You know, it's distress, you know. So birth is on the list, so yeah. Yes, it's traumatic. I think that we'd have to assume that it is, birth is rather traumatic. That is for the mother, and we can assume so for the child. So these kind of things are absent in the spiritual world. So that's the first thing that we need to note about the difference between this world and that world. So let's go on to the next characteristic that's described in text number 14. I'll just read the translations here. In the Vaikuntha planets, all the residents are similar in form to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are engaged in devotional service to the Lord without desires for sense gratification. So again, our description of Japan. What do they look like? And so what do people look like in the spiritual world? Well, they have a form similar to that of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is there in a four-armed form. Vaikuntheshwari, Lord Vishnu, very beautiful, decorated with jewels and ornaments and silken garments, a crown on his head. And all the residents are similarly very beautiful, very beautiful. So there's kind of a uniformity in how the people look there as well. As we may see around the world, we go different places. There's this general uniformity of how people appear. And so that's true in the spiritual world too. But they all have a very beautiful form, like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But there's one characteristic that Prabhupada describes in the purport here, I think, that's very interesting. He says that, let me see, can I find it very quickly here? He says, in Vaikuntha Loka, there is no occupation but the service of the Lord, and this service is not rendered with a purpose. This service is not rendered with a purpose. In this world, who does things without a purpose or to achieve some end? Anybody? I mean, it's very rare to find someone that's totally selfless. They're always acting not with the slightest concern for their own benefit. But in the spiritual world, this characterizes how people work. There's no what we call fruitive or karmic type of action. Karma exists in this world. You do an action, you get a certain result. And because of that, we all tend to think that, well, if I do this, then this is going to be the result. If I do this, work at this job, then I'll get this money. If I act in this way and interact with this person this way, then he'll be happy, she'll be happy, I'll be happy. We constantly are thinking in terms of the fruit of our actions, how our actions are connected to some fruit or some result. In the spiritual world, this is completely absent. And I think this is probably the biggest difference between this world and that world. This world is a causal. Everything has a cause and everything results in a cause. Therefore, we always find these stories about sages and in the Vedic literature, and there's always some other story. This happened to a person. And then some sage will tell us, well, this is why this happened. In his previous life, he did this or that. Because that's the nature of this world. In the spiritual world, that is conspicuous by its absence. People there don't render service to the Supreme Lord to get something. They render it just out of pure selfless desire. Of course, there is a desire, and that's to please the Lord, but not in any way to get anything other benefit. Does that make sense to you? Any questions about that? Yeah.
So, right now we're doing devotional service with the aim of going to the spiritual world, going back to Godhead. So is that considered motivated?
That's a good question, and it's covered in the next text here, text number 15. Let me just read it, and then we'll answer your question. In the Vaikuntha planets, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original person and who can be understood through the Vedic literature. He is full of the uncontaminated mode of goodness with no place for passion or ignorance. He contributes religious progress to the devotees. So, we attain the spiritual world not by our endeavors, but by mercy. Isn't it? And I think, what's the Christian saying? It's not by works alone. So, it's not by any endeavor we have, even the fervent chanting of the holy name, that guarantees us or makes the Lord open the doors to Vaikuntha Loka for us. No, it's only when the Lord is pleased that and extends the mercy to us that we're able to enter the spiritual world. And so the question is, and why do we do so many services? If it's only his mercy, and it's not caused by our activities or the service we render to them, why do we do it? Why do we do so many services? Does anybody have any idea what we're doing all day? Yes.
For our own benefit.
For our own benefit, yes. To attract the mercy of the Lord, yes. Yeah, we do so many services, and the Lord's not obliged by them, but he is pleased by them. And when he's pleased, we attract his mercy. We attract his mercy, and therefore, he gives us full entrance into the spiritual world. So the spiritual world is attained by mercy only. But we can act to try to attract that mercy to us. Yeah. Okay, that's a good distinction. She's asking, do we do it to attract his mercy, or do we do it just because it's pleasing? I think if we're doing it to attract his mercy, we're getting a little bit into that fruitive mentality, or thinking that by doing this action, I'll get a certain result, right? Whereas if we're doing it just to please him, whether he responds or not, but just to please him, then that's a little more selfless. So I think that's more of an attitude. Yeah, Jai. Right.
Just lost our mind, so we're still practicing what we would want to be doing naturally.
Yeah, actually, that's an interesting point, because the thing is that that's the nature of conditioned life, is we've forgotten and we've become so used to, like, I act for a certain purpose that we think that's natural, and it's unnatural to act just to please the Lord without any kind of expectation in return. So that's our disease, yes.
I actually wanted to share ways very much similar to what Jain Tampu was saying, that birth, old age, disease, and death are cause of pain, but the source of misery is forgetful of Krishna.
The source of?
Of misery, which is different from pain, is forgetfulness of Krishna.
Forgetfulness of Krishna, yes. Okay, thank you. Okay, so let's look at the next characteristic of the spiritual world, which, first, in this text 15, which I read, it talks about goodness only, the mode of goodness only. Of course, in Bhagavad Gita, there's a whole science of the three modes of material nature, ignorance, passion, and goodness. In the spiritual world, there's only pure goodness, and I think it can be summarized as no exploitation of others. In the spiritual world, you'll find that there's no exploitation of another living being by another. That's completely absent there, which again is starkly different from this world we live in, isn't it? I mean, everyone here is taking advantage of another in one way or another. And so this exploitative mentality is characteristic of this material world, And it's summed up in a verse from elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam that says that the four-handed living entities are food for the two-handed living entities, and it goes through a different progression of how sort of the food chain that we find in society, and how ultimately one living being is food for another. And so there's this idea that there's exploitation of each other living in this world. But that's completely absent in the spiritual world. There's none of this exploitative kind of activity because there's no need. There's no need there. We don't need to eat, sleep, mate, or defend. Those are activities of this material realm. In the spiritual realm, there's no need for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and so therefore, we don't have to take advantage of each other for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Okay. So let's go back to another characteristic. This. It means that we don't have to eat to live. We don't have to maintain our bodies by eating. Eating is a pleasure, is exchange of pleasure between the Lord and the living entity. It's not a necessity to keep body and soul together. That way it's different in the spiritual world. Okay, so text number 16 goes back to what Shyamala Kishori was describing. So let me just read it here. In those Vaikuntha planets, there are many forests which are very auspicious. In those forests, the trees are desire trees, and in all seasons, they are filled with flowers, fruits, because everything in Vaikuntha, in the Vaikuntha planets, is spiritual and personal. So maybe we can ask Shyamala Kishori why she specifically pointed out the trees and the flowers in her description of the spiritual world. Well, that's good enough. Okay. Yeah, well, the example of what the difference between the spiritual world and the material world that we're in can be explained in terms of trees. So I'll give you an example. What conditioned life means. If we go to a tree here in this world, say an apple tree. What can we get from the apple tree? We can get an apple from the apple tree. Can we get a pear from the apple tree? Can we get, huh? Not yet. Well, we're working on it, right? In the future. Who's in agricultural science here? Anybody? In the future, we shall be able to do that. But trust no future, no matter how bright. In a material world, an apple tree can give us an apple. But in the spiritual world, an apple tree they're called desire trees or kalpa vriksha trees. It means that whatever you desire, you can get from that tree. So if you want a pear from an apple tree, you can get it. Because the trees are personal and they want to serve Krishna just as much as you do. Now if you want a pear from an apple tree just so you can eat a pear for yourself, for your own sense enjoyment, you'll not get anything from that desire tree. But if you want a pear from an apple tree to serve Krishna, you can get it. Similarly, the animals are also like that. The cows there are called kamandenu cows. And they can give anything also to you, not just milk. They can give you unlimited quantities of milk, but they can give you so many other things as well. For the service of Krishna, not for your own enjoyment. So that's the difference between the conditioned state of this material world and the spiritual world. It's very dynamic and, as Prabhupada says here in the translation, personal. They're persons just as we're persons, and they're attempting to serve and love Krishna, and they reciprocate. Krishna reciprocates their love and service just as he can with any other person in the human form. sound like a good place? Is that a good selling point, Janitai? It's very personal. Okay, any questions about that? All right, so the next characteristic is what I term the Vaikuntha attitude. And this is probably the most attractive of all the features of the spiritual world, the Vaikuntha attitude. And that's described in text 17, 18, and 19. I won't read them, but I'll just read from my notes here. The first point about the Vaikuntha attitude is that Vishnu or God comes first in everything. And then others, and then ourselves. So first the Lord, his devotees, and then myself. That's how a resident of the spiritual world thinks about going about whatever activities he or she does. He or she, there are men and women. There's men and women forms in the spiritual world as well. So Vishnu first is the mentality that whatever I do to please Vishnu, the other devotees, and considerations about myself are the last point that I'm concerned with. That's the first part of the Vaikuntha attitude. And there's a non-enviousness that's there, a non-enviousness among all the living beings. And it's described nicely here in text number 18 when it's talking about the birds and the other animals, how they relate to each other. Because here again in this world we see that there's this idea of competition among the species. But that's completely absent in the spiritual world. The verse, text 18 says, when the king of the bees hums in a high pitch, singing the glories of the Lord, there is a temporary lull in the noise of the pigeon, the cuckoo, the crane, the chakravakra, the swan, the parrot, the partridge, and the peacock. Such transcendental birds stop their own singing simply to hear the glories of the Lord. Again, they're putting Vishnu first. They're putting others before them. This idea that I can do such nice service, I'm so important, let me serve the Lord ahead of others, is absent there. There's a non-enviousness, and they're always anxious to hear the glorification of the Lord by others. This is a lesson that, you know, we can take in our own service daily, even here in this plane, in this level of our spiritual existence, to always appreciate the service of our God brothers and God sisters, and to try to encourage them and not look to them for glorification of ourselves and our own activities, but try to push forward others to serving Krishna. So this non-enviousness, and it's even there among the flowers. It talks about, I won't even attempt to try to pronounce all these flowers that are in text number 19, but maybe you can just show them, these different types of flowers that are there. Mandara, Kundala. As I said, I won't even attempt to try to pronounce all of them. But the flowers, they're conscious persons also, and so therefore they all recognize Tulsi as Krishna's favorite, and it doesn't bother them. Think about that. It doesn't bother them. Plants are thinking like this. We'll just speak of people. It doesn't bother me that somebody else is a favorite of Krishna and not myself. Whereas here in this material world, we want to be the favorite in all spheres. Even among the plants, there's this non-enviousness, and Tulsi Devi is the Lord's favorite. And then finally, in text number 20, it talks about the relationship between men and women in the spiritual world. And that relationship is devoid of the ill effects of passion, despite the great beauty and attractiveness of the both men and women there. This whole idea of passion coming into the relationship between the sexes that's so prominent in this world is absent in the spiritual world, even though people are much more beautiful than they are here. I mean, it's quite kind of amazing. But that indeed is the case there, as confirmed in text number 20 of this verse. So, any questions about that? Okay. Next characteristic of the spiritual world in text number 21 is that, I'll just read the translation here. The ladies in the Vaikuntha planets are as beautiful as the goddess of fortune herself. Such transcendentally beautiful ladies, their hands playing with lotuses and their leg bangles tinkling, are sometimes seen sweeping the marble walls, which are bedecked at intervals with golden borders, in order to receive the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not dirty in the spiritual world. It's not dirty, it's not dusty, like it is here. Things don't deteriorate by the influence of time like they do here. Everything is eternally fresh and clean. So why are they sweeping the walls? Why are they sweeping the walls in Vaikuntha? We already talked about this a little bit today. Yeah.
Just as service?
Yeah, just as service. The pleasure of pleasing Krishna. The pleasure of pleasing Krishna. Therefore, they engage in the activities of cleaning, although it's not necessary. Yes. Why would you think to clean? Why clean when it's clean? Well, good question. Why would one even think to clean if it's never dirty? Yes. Okay. Well, they also want to render service. Yeah, okay, I like that. Yeah. Right, there are varieties of services there. Yeah. I think for all these reasons, the people there, they want to please Krishna, and they want to engage in some service. And so even if the walls don't need to be clean, or even never gets dirty, still the thought is that, well, let me render some humble service. Again, people there aren't looking me first. I want to go up there and be buddy-buddy with the Lord and hang out with him and hug him and all that kind of. No, they want some humble service, whatever it is. No matter how insignificant, let me just go and do some humble service to try to please the Lord. And so that's probably the origin of this idea of why they clean, because let me do some insignificant service. Not that I'm doing this to be noticed or something like that. I just want some little ability to do something. Okay? Okay, now text number 22, and we're only going to go up to 23. Text 22 describes the beautiful people. There's propaganda in this world that we should all want to be with the beautiful people of this world, the rich and famous. What is that? Lives of the Rich and Famous. Thing, a television program, or the whole idea is that these are people who are role models, and that we should want to be with or emulate their lives, the beautiful people. Well, Vaikuntha is actually the place, the real place of the beautiful people, and that's described in text number 22. The goddesses of fortune worship the Lord in their own gardens by offering tulsi leaves on the coral-paved banks of transcendental reservoirs of water. While offering worship to the Lord, They can see on the water the reflections of their beautiful faces with raised noses, and it appears that they have become more beautiful because of the Lord's kissing their faces. So these are the real beautiful people and the beautiful places, the gardens and the buildings, the city that the Lord lives in. They are buildings, and not only just forests. Shyamala Kishori was describing the residents of Goloka Vrindavan, where there's a village life, and they're living in the forest, and so that's a very big part of the beauty there. This is a description of the Vaikuntha planets, where they're more grander of palaces and manicured parks and things like that. So there's this variety in the spiritual world. You have your country living and you have your city living. And so these Vaikuntha planets are where the Lord lives in the cities. And so wonderful ponds and gardens are created there, just like we attempt to recreate in this world. But they're not just left idle. I don't know if you recall, about a year ago there was some news story about one heiress that died. I can't remember her name right now, but she was very wealthy, and she spent so many years of her life at the end in a hospital bed in New York. But she had properties all over the country, and she had a property in Santa Barbara, California, which was on the ocean front, over on a cliff overlooking the ocean. And she hadn't visited there since the 50s. But every day, the gardeners came there, and there was an immaculately manicured, you know, gardens and everything in this place. And she hadn't been there for 40 years. But still, she was paying every day, you know, to have them maintain it. Well, the gardens in the Vaikuntha aren't like that, in that no one uses them. They're just kept behind a locked door. I mean, the Lord strolls in the gardens with his associates. The associates, the damsels of the Vaikuntha planets are there. And the Lord comes through, and as is indicated in this verse, he kisses them sometimes. So the spiritual world, this kind of very personal relationship between the Lord and his devotees exist. So these are all descriptions of the spiritual world, and we should be anxious to hear them, because text 23 tells us what happens if we're not. So we'll just sort of end on that note. It is very much regrettable that unfortunate people do not discuss the descriptions of the Vaikuntha planets, but engage in topics which are unworthy to hear and which bewilder one's intelligence. Those who give up the topics of Vaikuntha and take to talks of the material world are thrown into the darkest region of ignorance. So we don't want to be put in the darkest region of ignorance, which takes us back to those things we talked about: birth, death, old age, and disease. That's what takes place in the dark. You're afraid. And what are you afraid of? Well, you're afraid of birth, death, old age, and disease. So we can be cured of that. We can be guaranteed that we don't have to go there just by hearing these kind of topics about the spiritual world. Not only does hearing them repeatedly make it more real to us, it purifies us. It purifies our consciousness so we can actually begin to experience that. And the ultimate state of realization is that that nature of the spiritual world can be experienced by us full time, right here, right now. And there's different examples which explain that to us. Somebody was talking about being a mother. Jai Gaurang was talking about being a mother before, and how one characteristic of a mother is that they see things and experience things in a different way than other people. And they experience two different natures in a way that others may not experience it. Prabhupada gives the example of how a mother cleans the stool of the child. And she doesn't mind touching the child or touching the stool even to do that, whereas it may be revolting to somebody else. Indeed, what does she see it as opposed to being the stool of her child? Sandalwood paste. Sandalwood paste is something we adorn, a fragrant, cooling application for the body, which is a symptom of honor. It's kind of colored the same as maybe... Same texture also. But why does the mother see not mind doing that? What? Why? Why does she not mind? What's the difference? What makes the difference between these two natures of that thing? Love makes the difference. Love makes the difference. So love makes the difference in how we experience even this material world around us. It can become the Vaikuntha world just by developing our love of Krishna. Okay? Any questions while the prasad is being distributed? Yes?
I was wondering about the necessity of eating the jivas. So, you said that many of us might also be just at the speed of Krishna. So, is it possible to think, dust over there may not be like messy, but it might be beautiful. So, just to clean up, dust there might be.
Okay, yeah, that's I like that. That's very good. That the dust there is not like the dust here. The dust there is not contaminating. There is dust, but it's not contaminating. It's purifying. It's the saffron mercy particles of the Lord and His devotees. And so what they're doing is not cleaning, but they're gathering it and trying to get the mercy by keeping it on their head and rolling in it. So, yeah. Yes. Yes. Oh, wait a minute. Bala was saying he's going to go. I'll get back to you. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that actually Prabhupada said during his illness toward the end of his stay here in this world that you should know that I'm never actually suffering.
Exactly.
And so there may be external manifestation or view of that it's a suffering condition, but the pure devotee of the Lord himself, they're not affected by these things. And so, yeah, they're not suffering in that sense. So why then the external manifestation? For service for us. So that, and to evoke our compassion, our love, and service to them. Like that. Okay. Yes. Say the prayers.